Welcome to the EDUCAUSE podcast.
Our view is that unless you have good tools so that when faculty decide that they're going to take a risk, that we have the tools we can use to make that work for them in a way that isn't frustrating.
That's David Lewis, Assistant Vice President for Digital Scholarly Communication at Indiana University. I'm Jerry Bain for EDUCAUSE, and I spoke with David at the Coalition for Networked Information 2010 Spring Member Meeting. You're giving a presentation here at CNI called The Big Digital Machine, which sounds like a ride to me. But what would you say are the major issues facing digital scholarly publishing today, and how does the Big Digital Machine Project address some of those issues?
The premise of the Big Digital Machine Project, and the name may be somewhat unfortunate. We don't really think of it as a machine, but really as a series of capacities that give the university the ability to manage in a more effective way than we can with the current systems at our disposal, the scholarly output of the university. So journals, preprints, institutional repositories, textbooks, monographs. There are systems to do that, but they've been developed largely in silos. They're not integrated particularly well. They're not enterprise-level systems. And so our view is that we can't really compete against the big scholarly publishers and try to recapture the management of our intellectual content without better tools. So the Big Digital Machine Project is an attempt to try to advance that agenda.
So a digital a university press like IU Press, they mostly do books, and then someone else does smaller publications, and you're trying to get those together?
I think the better example would be in the journal field, where there is a very good piece of software, the Open Journal System, which has been developed by a group of Canadians called the Public Knowledge Project. It's a very nice piece of software, works really well, but it doesn't have the system itself is not enterprise scale. So that if you want to customize beyond a certain point, you have to run another version of the software. So you end up in some cases running multiple versions of a piece of software because the software itself is not yet capable enough to work at enterprise scale. And DSpace has similar problems, where if you want to customize beyond a certain point, you have to have different iterations for different projects. And our intent is both to help those projects grow to enterprise scale so that we can manage them at a big institution like IU in one iteration or maybe across multiple institutions in smaller situations, but also that they integrate, so that you could take the content that's in OJS, the Open Journal System, and seamlessly migrate it into a repository and then hopefully migrate it into a preservation engine that might be DuraCloud or it might be the HathiTrust or some other long-term preservation strategy, and all those things fit together and link well. And right now they don't.
So what are you doing to link them? Are you developing new software? Are you linking already existing software through some sort of bridge, or how does that work?
What our strategy to date has been to bring a number of these organizations together, and we've seeded some pilot projects that those projects are working on to link and connect each other. So we're working primarily with the Public Knowledge Project and OJS, with Connections, which does textbook instructional content out of Rice University, and with the DuraSpace people, which gives us DSpace and Fedora and the DuraCloud product that's coming on now. So what we've done is seeded some money to allow those groups to connect. And I think maybe more importantly, we've brought some of those people together, and they've had conversations that in the past they had not had. And I think that's probably where we'll have the most influence over the near term. And I think part of the strategy is to bring some other players in that general space, both the preservation people and potentially some of the Europeans who do similar things, to have those conversations so that we can look at where are the interfaces and how do we define the protocols that run across those interfaces in a way that gives you modules that then a university could take, plug together in a way that makes sense for their particular environment, and in essence construct their own big digital machine out of the pieces that now we've sort of made Lego-like so they connect.
Mm-hmm. So how do you think this project will change faculty culture? Do you believe the problem is more technical than sociological?
Well, I have to say I spent yesterday afternoon listening to the presentation on the Berkeley faculty project that they've been doing for 5 years, and then the Ithaca most recent faculty survey, and it's pretty clear that changing the sociology and the way in which faculty behave is a non-trivial and long-term project. And the current reports that I heard yesterday actually were pretty depressing in terms of faculty's unwillingness to take risk to move the system. So that's clearly an issue that we're all going to have to work on over the long haul. But our view is that unless you have good tools so that when faculty decide that they're going to take a risk, that journals just become so expensive that they're going away and they want to try to make something happen, that they want to use creative alternatives to textbooks, that we have the systems, the tools we can use to make that work for them in a way that isn't frustrating, so that we can provide the support. So our view is that the tools are a necessary precondition, but it's not sufficient.
And how do you see BDM progressing over the next 2 years or 5 years?
As I said earlier, we're in the process of seeding some projects and seeding some conversations. I would think that our initial projects should be finished in the middle of this calendar year, is our expectation. At that point, we got some initial funding from CIC, and we'll have spent that down pretty much. And I think at that point, we'll have to reflect on whether or not what, in fact, the Big Digital Machine Project wants to be, whether it's a series of other projects that we would go out and try to find funding for, whether it really is seeding the conversations to get the players who have their own funding streams together and really talking about it, or what the mix is. I think we'll come to probably some decisions about that over the summer.
So you recently wrote a publication on the impact of open access journals versus subscription journals. Could you give us a brief idea of your methodology and findings?
What I looked at, and this grows out of some work that I had read about by Clayton Christensen. He's written a couple of recent books, one on healthcare and one on K-12 education, and he lays out his notions of how innovations develop. And one of the things that he said that fascinated me was that innovation gets adopted in an S-curve. So it starts really slowly, and then all of a sudden it takes off. And the trick is in the early stages, where you have very little penetration of the new innovation, is to figure out when the world starts to flip, if it's going to flip, and how to predict that. And I'm was very interested in open access as this kind of an innovation. And I think one could make a case that it is an innovation in the way Christensen talks about it. And his general methodology is that you plot the increase on a log scale, and that's how you normalize any kind of S-curve. So the difficulty was to find some data points that would give me a sense of what the penetration of open access journals was to subscription journals so that you could begin to plot that line. I looked at the directory of open access journals out of the University of Lund and tried to compare it across some other things. And the data was not particularly robust, and I wouldn't take any of it to the bank. But subsequently, Outsell had done a report that gave much better data points, and which led to a slightly more conservative prediction than I had made. But I still think if this methodology, if Christensen's right about it and open access follows this trend, that we could be looking at penetration of 50 to 70% open access journals in the scholarly journal environment in 10 or 12 years. So I found that to be a pretty optimistic finding. And if you straight line the trends, it's really depressing.
Right.
You know, you go 10 years and we're at 20%. But if you look at it as an S-curve, then it becomes pretty exciting. Mm-hmm. So I think it's worth watching. I think we've been at open access journals for a long time. The systems are good. The licensing is there. There are PLOS gives us really good examples that demonstrate that high-quality journals can be done in this environment effectively. But it's not going to go easily. But I think we'll see a tipping point 5 to 8 years out. We'll look back and say, yeah, we were really right. It's going to happen.
Is there any other projects that you're involved in that you'd like to talk about?
Textbooks are a really interesting environment, but it's a long conversation. And the short version is that, I think the university needs to step up, bring some of that in-house. Right now, the money all goes between students and publishers, and we don't really play. But we can make textbooks and other kinds of supplemental materials, in my view, much cheaper if we're prepared to take some risks and bring some of that money in-house. I think faculty are discouraged by the current environment. Students are just extraordinarily pissed off, as they should be. I think that's an arena that's really ripe for change. There's huge money on the table and lots of commercial interest, so it'll be tough, but
so
it's important.
Why don't we visit you in another 3 or 4 months? We'll talk more about that.
That'd be great.
That'd be great. Thanks, David Lewis, Assistant Vice President for Digital Scholarly Communication at Indiana University. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
You can find more podcasts like this on a variety of topics by visiting our podcast page at www.educause.edu/podcasts. Or you can find us on iTunes by searching for EDUCAUSE. I'm Jerry Bain. Thanks for listening.